response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
We are off and rolling. Happy Friday out there. July 10th, 2026 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. You can follow the show on X and on Facebook. Just type in the name of the show, The Gabe Kuhn Show. Follow, and you'll get all of our content and our rundown for each day's show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on X at Janice_Kuhn71. I'm alongside, as always, on this Friday, the executive producer of the program. That would be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning929. Connor, how we doing, brother?
What's up, man?
Happy Friday, man.
Happy Friday.
Yeah, hanging in there. Exciting.
In, yeah.
Exciting night one of Summer League for you?
Yeah, not bad.
Somewhat. Things to break down. We promised our four, like, our generalizations and conclusions on AJ DeBanza and Darren Peterson and what their careers are going to be today. Who's going to have the better one after last night's game? Who won the matchup?
I think AJ won the matchup.
Yeah, I'd have to say so, too.
Yeah.
I'd have to say so, too. Eight turnovers there for Darren. But we'll get to it, and then we'll get to the rest of Summer League. Some performances I wanted to point out from last night, even in the late game. Darius Acuff Jr. and Keaton Wagler. Keaton Wagler, more on him in a second. It was a rough outing. It was a rough outing for him, if you watched last night at 8 o'clock. And then tonight, more Summer League in the Grizzlies versus the Bulls. Caleb Wilson versus Cam Boozer. I know that we talked about AJ versus Darren being like the reactions, being hot and heavy, overreactions being hot and heavy. I think in the city of Memphis, if Cam Boozer does not play as well as Caleb Wilson and has a bit of a struggle, do you think Memphians will react, you know, healthfully? Do you think it'll be comfortable? Do you think people will...
No.
Be all right?
I think people will probably overreact.
Okay, that's what I was figuring. I just hope that we don't jump the shark. That's my hope. But anybody out there that's watching it tonight and waiting to react, maybe just save those reactions for when we actually see regular season games. But we will see that tonight. And we also have some NBA news. We're still on LeBron watch. Wimby, have some news on him that could be scary for the rest of the league, certainly the Western Conference. As far as guests are concerned, Parker Fleming will join at 4 o'clock, and then David Cobb will join at 5 o'clock per normal from CBS Sports on a Friday. Blitz at 5:30. That is the show for you. So last night we had some good Summer League action. I have to give credit where credit's due. They knew exactly which matchups would catch our eye and catch our attention. And the one that absolutely caught our attention, Jazz versus Wizards, for a lot of different reasons, but the biggest reason, Wizards had the number one pick, selected AJ DeBanza. Jazz had the number two pick and picked Darren Peterson. Here are the final stat lines for both of those guys last night, starting with Darren Peterson. 24 points in 30 minutes, 6 for 18 from the field, 2 for 7 from 3, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and 8 turnovers. Rough, rough night as far as his facilitation was concerned after a best night of his sort of college or professional career in his summer league game against the Grizzlies, where he had 25 and 12 assists. And then AJ DeBanza, I think similar offensively in 26 minutes, 27 points, 7 for 18 from the field, 0 for 5 from 3, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 turnover. I'll say this about both these guys, Connor. This is my overwhelming reaction having watched that game cover to cover. I don't really care about the shots not falling just because I watch these guys every single time down the floor when they get their hands on the ball and they have a chance in a one-on-one ISO situation. They are so gifted at getting to their spots and getting their shots off. Now, I want to see those fall as those continue. They continue to get those opportunities, certainly as we get into the preseason and the regular season. But, like, I am more concerned about where these young guys are getting to, what spots they're getting to, how the shot looks when it comes out, than the actual shot falling. That's my reaction to last night, because neither of them, from a efficiency perspective, were great. But they still just jump off the screen when you watch them.
Yeah, I also noticed both of them just can get within the paint.
Yep.
Pretty whenever they want to. I thought that was extremely impressive. And I think that they're both just going to have great careers. They both are able to score at such a high level already, and their games have translated to Summer League. They're playing better bodies than they did in college basketball. And Yeah, Darren Peterson, I think that he's trying to facilitate a little bit more. That seems to be a skill that he is actively working on. 8 turnovers. He also had 9 fouls last night.
Yeah.
I always forget that you could foul just as many times as you want to in summer league. But I have absolutely no doubts that both of them are going to be impactful NBA players in year one. And it's so hard to not overreact to summer league. But I never really understood why Darren Peterson being good meant that A.J. DeBanza wasn't the right pick at number one for Washington. And that's why last night I sent you a text. Turns out A.J. DeBanza, good at basketball. Who could have possibly seen this coming? It's like, of course this guy came out and he was better than everybody else in summer league when he was on the court because he was the number one pick. It's what he should be doing.
Here's what's tricky about those two guys, though, is Darren Peterson during before the college basketball season and early in the college basketball season was the no-doubt number one guy. And obviously there were some concerns about his want-to and the injuries and the cramping and everything else, and that's why he falls to number two. I can see where, Wizards fans look up and just sort of look at the skills that he possesses, and now you see him, on ball trying to facilitate for his teammates a little bit more. He can get some high assist totals. Already had 12 there against the Grizzlies. You would look at Darren Peterson's skill set, and you'd say that's probably a little bit more well-rounded than what we were looking for, but A.J. DeBanza, like when we're talking about 19-year-olds with just scoring ability and footwork beyond their years and IQ with their hands on the ball, that feels like A.J. DeBanza to me. Now, as far as creation for the rest of his teammates like Darren Peterson, I don't know if that's like something he's going to be asked to do or if it's going to be really heavy on his plate in his NBA career because he seems like a volume scorer. But I could see where Wizards fans look up and get a little bit frustrated by the skill set they're seeing from Darren Peterson because he seems to be a guy who can be on ball for you, getting high assist totals, and scoring with the likes of an A.J. DeBanza.
Maybe. I think that's a fair point. They have guys in place in Washington already
Sure. That
can do that. They have young players, young talented players, who are going to be mostly on ball. The piece that they needed was an A.J. DeBanza who can score at will, get into the paint at will. He can still create for others when he needs to, but at the end of the day, you have A.J. DeBanza on your team to be a scorer,
Yes. And
that is what he was showing last night. Darren Peterson for the Utah Jazz, they need somebody who's just going to catch the ball and shoot, go and create their own shots, cause havoc, and that's what Darren Peterson's going to do. He can score at will. They have the point guards in place for both of those teams. They just needed a shot at scoring, and that is what both of these guys are going to be able to give both teams. And yeah, like you might have some, Washington at some points might look at Darren Peterson and say, man, it would be really nice to have Darren Peterson. But again, you have Trae Young on your team already. You have a bunch of young guards on your team already. A.J. DeBanza made the most sense for you. He was arguably the best talent available. And after last night's game, I don't think any of them are probably regretting that pick.
Yeah, no. I'm not saying regret it, but at the same time, Darren Peterson, I just love the skill set he has. I know that last night was ugly, though, right? I just think it's a little bit more well-rounded, while he is shorter,
right?
So there's some give and take to, the decision they made. But it's just interesting to look back at how this all shook out, considering what the original sort of unanimous take was, that Darren Peterson was going to be the number one overall pick. Also, I watched Kings versus Clippers last night. Darius Acuff, I'm not going to freak out at all, but his I know he's a volume scorer. I know he's a shot chucker. I know he's a scoring guard. Buddy, he's been really inefficient. While he has put up 20 in every single game in summer league, he's been very inefficient. Now, I will say he did admit it after last night's game.
He did.
Kings win 91-85. But Darius Acuff Jr., I think it's going to be a little bit more of a learning process than I even thought regarding dealing with the bigger bodies,
Right. Length,
physicality in the NBA, because he's a lot more inefficient than he was even from the three-point line than he was in college, at least.
I think you hit the nail on the head. The part that he has to get used to is everybody's just bigger in summer league and is going to be bigger in the NBA. It's going to be more difficult to get to your spots to create your own shots, and I think he's just having an adjustment to it. He's getting to those spots. He's just not knocking down the shots. And Darius Acuff's one of those guys where I saw the shots fall when we were in college or when he was in college, but it's something to keep an eye on, I think. But at the end of the day, when he knows that it's not what he should be doing right now, I don't have a ton of concern about it because, again, I've seen those shots fall at an efficient rate before, and he's probably just getting used to the speed of the new game. And what I have liked is that he's getting others involved a little bit more already. His defense has been a little bit better, I think, than expected. Teams are still attacking him a bit, but he's able to pick up a couple of steals, which is a good right. sign. So, and that's why there's got to be an adjustment period for all of these guys. Yes. And not all of them are going to go out there and have crazy efficient nights and with high scoring. This is their first NBA action. Yes, it's summer league, but still, it's a higher level of basketball than even what they did in college basketball. And that's why I caution everyone to not overreact to a performance that may not be perfect, especially from these lottery guys. Like, it's going to take them some time to get used to it. And at the end of the day, he's still having good games. We just yes. need that efficiency to show up.
Yes.
But to be quite honest with you, he's like, going to have room for error in Sacramento. He's going to have room for that.
Darius Acuff Jr., nothing looks too fast for him. Just the shots aren't falling, and he's right. a little bit out of sorts with dealing with the length and athleticism and the physicality he has on the right. other side. But it's nothing that I thought was impossible by the time he got to summer league. These are things that you could very well have predicted for Darius Acuff Jr. heading into summer league. Now, I know you don't like overreacting Keaton Wagler, though. This also fits into that criteria of kind of things I saw coming because he was, you know, not the highest rated recruit, and he's still thin, and he's not crazy athletic, but he is a 6'6" combo guard who can shoot the peel off the ball. But 7 points last night, 1 for 7 from the field, 1 for 5 from three. 2 rebounds and an assist. I knew he'd have to have an adjustment, but it's going to be a pretty substantial adjustment. He looks a step slow, Connor. I'm just going to be honest with you. He looks a step slow at the current moment. That doesn't mean it'll always be that way, and that doesn't mean that you should, write the obituary on his career by any stretch of the imagination. But he's kind of got a little baby deer-esque quality for to sure. him, watching him now against bigger and better competition, even in the summer league.
Yeah, it's we've said the one thing I do think you can react to is the speed of the game for some of these guys. And with Darren Peterson, with Cam Boozer, AJ DeBanza, Darius Acuff, Kingston Flemings, like Michael Brown Jr., all of them have looked comfortable. They've been able to play at their speed. They've been able to get to their shots. Some of them aren't falling. Some of them are. But at the end of the day, they look comfortable. He was the first one of this group of guys where you felt like, oh, he's a little bit of a deer in headlights right now, and he's still trying to figure out what his role is, I think, on this team. I will say I don't really understand why the Clippers deployed him in the way that they did. I thought that he was going to be just more dominant in the game, and it was an odd lineup, I think, for Keaton Wagler. So hopefully,
there's a lot of other guys taking like the full on-ball reps away right. from him, which I don't get for a number 5 overall pick.
That's what I don't understand. If that's the role that he had and thrived in college. So I think I understand why he was a little bit uncomfortable. That's why I was like, I don't know if he knew where his place was. Yeah. So hopefully the Clippers have seen that and say, oh, this is our prized prospect, our prized lottery pick. Maybe we need to facilitate him in a way or deploy him in a way where he is most comfortable instead of just allowing these other guys to be on ball more. So hopefully you see moving forward, they mesh him with the offense a little bit more because it was just an odd way to
deploy
him.
Just to be honest, if I'm taking my sort of lead guard that I took at number 5 in the NBA draft, I'm probably going to put him on ball and tell everybody else get out of the way. But again, like, this is where summer league can be deceiving because you have other guys
right.
trying to fight for their NBA lives, fight for a two-way, fight for a contract in general.
Right.
So, you know, you can give them all the directives possible to try to feed the ball to your prized possession you got in the NBA draft, but that doesn't mean they're going to follow those orders in the end of the day, those marching orders.
Yeah, he was struggling a little bit with the physicality and the pressure the defense was giving him. But again, it's his first game. Let's see how he adjusts. Let's see how the Clippers adjust moving forward. Ultimately, I still think he's going to be okay. He is a little bit raw of the prospect still, but he has had such an ascension in the last few years. It may just take some time with him. I think the other guys were more NBA ready, and that's why there were real conversations about Darius Acuff versus Keaton Wagler. And I think both of us said that we probably would have gone Acuff if we had the choice there for the Memphis Grizzlies. But at the end of the day, I still think he's a good prospect, and what I like about him is that he's got some defensive prowess. He's just got to get more comfortable. He's got to figure out the speed and the athleticism of this next level. It's something to keep an eye on. It's not what you wanted in his first summer league game, for sure. But again, it felt like his role was off of what he will actually be doing in NBA games. So maybe we see an adjustment moving forward for both the Clippers and him.
Now, tonight's more interesting to me, not just because the Grizzlies are playing, but I think when we talk about matchups for these top prospects, very rarely is it position on position, like one-on-one, hey, you guys are going to go at each other the entire night. Usually they play different positions. We're just talking about team, seeing who wins, seeing who plays well. This is going to be a straight-up man-on-man measuring contest between Caleb Wilson and Cam Boozer. I'd imagine Caleb Wilson has a nice little chip on his shoulder, considering he was the pick below.
Sure.
Cam Boozer. And if you're looking back for, like, historical context, they played against each other once in their one-and-done year at both North Carolina and Duke, respectively. Cam Boozer, I remember the conversation around this game because North Carolina ended up winning 71-68. And the idea was that Caleb Wilson wholly outplayed Cam Boozer. I don't know if you remember that time and how it was being discussed, but it was, oh, Caleb Wilson handled Cam Boozer in the one matchup that they had against each other. I thought it was a pretty good back-and-forth matchup. Cam Boozer was 10 for 21, which is actually below efficiency for him, but 2 for 4 from 3. But he had 24, 11, 2 assists. But Caleb Wilson there on the other side, of course, had 23, 8 for 12 from the field, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists, 2 steals. He seemed to be all over the floor. That's why North Carolina was able to get the win at home against Duke. But there is some, I guess, bad blood there, if you will, and more bad blood that could be created tonight and heading into the future between Caleb Wilson and Cam Boozer. I for one, am hyped up to see what it looks like.
Yeah, both guys have kind of acknowledged, and I think everybody at the top of the draft has acknowledged, they'll all be tied together for their entire careers for very obvious reasons. And we will see that matchup tonight. It will be fun to see. In the first game, you know, they were both scoring at a high level. Caleb Wilson just did it in a far more efficient way than Cam Boozer did. Like, we don't want Cam Boozer to go 10 for 21, but at the same time, maybe seeing 21 shots from Cam Boozer in a game may be something that Memphis Grizzlies fans want to see. They were both, you know, I will say Cam Boozer was able to rebound the basketball much, much better than Caleb Wilson in that matchup, but you could say that Caleb Wilson's defense was better in that matchup. So I'm really curious to see how many times they're actually matched up on each other, how many times they're bully balling each other in the paint. We will see that athleticism versus
that's the thing
is stoic game, I suppose, that some people say Cam Boozer have. So I'm really excited to see it. It's going to be fascinating. It's going to be a must-watch TV, to be quite honest, I think, for Memphis Grizzlies fans. It's the matchup that we've all been looking forward to. I thought Darren Peterson versus Cam Boozer was going to be fun when we first saw the schedule, but the one that I had circled was, Boozer versus Wilson. And again, Gabe, I'm sure that the reactions to tonight will be measured and not overreactive at all.
You're hilarious, but you know I wish they would be.
I mean, it was a thriller last time they played, so it'd be awesome if we got that again.
I think the biggest thing though that tonight I'm excited for is I know we've seen it before, right? Like Cam Boozer dealing with an athletic matchup and trying to you know, take his at least perceived lack of athleticism and make his game still work against that guy, right? I want to see it again tonight. I'm not – like, and you can go back to North Carolina versus Duke last year when North Carolina was able to win, when Caleb Wilson and Cam Boozer were matched up against each other. I thought Cam Boozer did a fine job against the athleticism of Caleb Wilson. But you have to keep doing that on a consistent basis because I think game to game, Cam Boozer understands he's going to have to deal with more athleticism in the National Basketball Association. That's just the nature of the league and where he's at this particular moment. So, like, I think tonight's a nice little measuring stick, not that he doesn't have any other measuring sticks in the past, nice little measuring stick of how can his game translate when the guy on the other side is just truly probably more physically talented than him. Physically, not, you know, skill-wise, but physically talented.
I'm really curious, Gabe, do you expect the Grizzlies to look different tonight and how they're operating? Because Utah Summer League is kind of the preseason for the Vegas Summer League in a way. It's like Summer League preseason. I am curious if they go out tonight and have more of an emphasis on Cam Boozer being the offensive hub. And I wonder if we'll see Cedric Howard kind of go back into the role that we expect him to
have.
Cam
Boozer's kind of done that already, even though he hasn't been fully featured.
I think that's kind of what I mean, though, is like, I wonder if the goal for his game tonight will be, let's get him involved in as many plays as possible. And again, you've brought up this point a few times, and it's one that's absolutely true. One of the very tricky things about Summer League is, if you have a player who isn't on ball, and there are other guys that are on ball that are trying to make the league, it can throw things off every once in a while, because those guys are going to go out there and try to prove what they can do. I am curious, though, if the Grizzlies coaching staff is going to be like, hey, this is an important matchup. Let's get him involved tonight.
Tonight I'm going to be watching Cam Boozer. I think Summer League overarchingly, though, I'm watching Cedric Howard, because it's clear they have told him to, you know, we want you to be the focal point of this particular Summer League team.
Sure.
And up till now, he's been the focal point, but he's just been sort of heaving in a lot of ways. He's been putting up a lot of shots and not necessarily getting his teammates involved in the way that I expect him to, that I saw him do last year in a lot of, like, his reads. He got better with them as the season went along. I haven't seen that in Summer League thus far. And you know, Cedric Howard talked the other day about it. He said he doesn't think he's played very well. It doesn't seem to be to be the directive of the staff on hand there to tell Cedric, hey, just put up every single shot you possibly can and we'll see where the chips fall at the end of the game. That's not the directive they're giving him. They want him to take more of a playmaking approach, and he hasn't quite done that for his teammates like I expected him to.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked to Drew Hill about it, and Cedric Howard, we know what comments he's had. I bet Cedric will have a little bit of a different mindset in this game, because it seems like he's a bit disappointed in himself for how he's been playing throughout the Summer League so far. Again, I think that he's been better than some people are trying to make it out to be, and I don't really mind Cedric Howard going out there and trying to see what it feels like to be the guy that takes the most shots on a team. But at the end of the day, I think for this Summer League team to have success, for Cam Boozer to have success, they've got to start developing that chemistry. And it would be really cool if we got to see a bit of a two-man game there. Like, to be quite honest, I think a Cedric Howard, Cam Boozer pick and roll would, like, heal my soul. I would absolutely love to see it. And then on the other side, you know, it's not just Caleb Wilson that I'm excited to see. We also have, like, Dalen Swain's over there, too.
Yep.
That's a really fun Summer League roster. So I cannot wait for this game. To be honest, it feels like it's my most anticipated game of the Summer League of the weekend, no doubt.
Yeah, without question. Because we're going to get this one-on-one matchup.
Right.
And we're going to see where the chips fall in the end of the day. Now, we're going to take a little bit of an early break right here. And when we come back, there's a report out today about Victor Wembanyama and his extension that is potentially going to kick in. Well, at least that he's eligible for. And it is 5 years, $251 million, and it's a maximum rookie scale extension. What are the San Antonio Spurs? What is Wemby going to do this offseason? We'll talk about it next, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. There has been some back and forth about Victor Wembanyama, the alien for the Spurs, who just came off of a NBA Finals loss, and his rookie scale extension that is going to be a maximum. It's 5 years, $251 million that he could sign for this offseason if he pleases to. Now, 2 years ago, or 2 hours ago, not 2 years ago, 2 hours ago, Victor Wembanyama took to Twitter, and said, Spurs family, I'm here to stay, whatever it takes, with a heart directly next to that. And we were wondering, okay, well, why is he tweeting this out? This is a bit strange. I know we're talking about the extension, but what could this indicate? And according to Jake Fisher of the Stein Line, Victor Wembanyama is apparently considering signing for less than his five-year, $251 million maximum scale extension to provide San Antonio greater financial flexibility. And this is, like who, Connor? Who did this equaling out a championship?
Not Donovan Mitchell, right?
No.
It's Jalen Brunson,
even though Donovan Mitchell was given a whole lot of credit earlier this week for taking $273 million. But Jalen Brunson did that a few years back with the Knicks to put together the team that they had with Mikal Bridges and Karl Anthony Towns and OG Anunoby and Josh Hart, right? That's what he did. Now, we were asking, after the Knicks were able to win that championship, is this going to force the hand or make other players think? And here, just a couple of months later, you have Victor Wembanyama, the guy who lost directly to that Knicks team, to Jalen Brunson, who took a pay cut, saying he may be willing to take a pay cut at the end of the day. I'm going to say this right now. This is terrifying. Because the Spurs seemingly have a fair amount of flexibility. Did you see what the contract they gave to Tobias Harris to add to the roster that's already NBA Finals roster? Because I did. There's a lot of players that already want to play with Wimby, so I think they will do good in the trade market and the free agency market. But if they're saving money along the way, they can aim for bigger fish to go with this 7'4" freak of nature. And Stephon Castle. And Dylan Harper, who we saw just break out in the playoffs this past season. So we were asking the question about Jalen Brunson. Would somebody else decide to go that route? It looks like Victor Wembanyama may do that, having lost directly to Jalen Brunson. And that makes the San Antonio Spurs even scarier. And I think going into the new CBA, we thought everything was going to be relatively the same, normal. Guys would still sign for the max. Guys wouldn't even balk at the idea of getting their money while they could get it. But considering what teams now have to do to keep their roster together, to keep the cap situation at least movable, I'm starting to think this may be a little bit more prevalent until a new CBA is signed, if they get rid of the aprons or otherwise, because you have to do things to give you the utmost flexibility, and a player being willing to take less than the max certainly does that for teams.
So it's interesting because, Gabe, I don't know if you remember, right after the Knicks won the title, we had a conversation about, do you think it will become a trend
right.
for these guys to take smaller contracts?
We did.
And the only guy that we landed on that we could realistically see doing this was Victor Wembanyama. So there was no surprise that he's doing this. And I agree with you. It is terrifying from a standpoint, I think, for the rest of the NBA, because the Spurs are now going to have way more flexibility to do what they want to moving forward in the future.
If he follows through with this.
And I am going to be really curious, too, if... because the rest of the league, I wonder if the Players Association is going to have a problem with this. When you have two superstar players.
Oh, they will. They had a problem with Jalen,
right,
with Brunson.
Setting a precedent of, I can make this amount of money, but I'm going to take less. Because when Victor Wembanyama takes less money, when Jalen Brunson takes less money, to be quite honest with you, what it does is it will also take money away from the guys below them, lower level players. It will have some sort of ripple effect. It may not be massive, but a couple million dollars is a lot of money.
Well, and I also think you can create some more contention between front offices and stars that are seeking
100%.
Those extensions.
That's where I think the Players Association may have the most problem.
And they will have a problem. They'll put out a statement. They'll do what they can, which is probably nothing, because an individual can do what they want. In the end of the day, if you have the mindset of, I need to get my payday while I can, which I'm going to be very clear is a fair mindset to have, Connor. Can we acknowledge that? It's fair as hell for a star player after his first contract to say, I'm taking all the money that they could possibly pay me, because that's what they've earned, and they deserve it at that point. But there are some players who have that mindset of, I'm going to do everything I can for a championship because I'll see that money that I'm forfeiting on the back end if I'm able to do that. And it seems like Victor Wembanyama is certainly in that mindset. Winning,
right.
Controls his basketball reality. And, I think that's a mindset that a lot of people feel like is a little bit lost in today's day and age. And I'm not even going to come close to saying Victor Wembanyama's bringing it back, but certainly you see where his mindset is by even fielding the idea of taking less than what he has certainly earned. And let's be honest, this would be I mean, when we talk about value for Victor Wembanyama as it pertains to extension, he could be the most valuable player after his rookie contract for an extension just about in NBA history. Obviously, you have LeBron and everybody else, but Victor Wembanyama is one of the most valuable players in the history of the NBA, just considering where the cap is and considering the type of talent he is and how young he is at this moment.
No doubt. No doubt about it. If the Spurs can pull this off and he takes less money to give them real financial flexibility with guys, I think the two in mind specifically are probably Dylan Harper and Stephon Castle. Sure. Because what we're looking at right now with Oklahoma City Thunder, what they are experiencing is, I'm not faulting SGA for this by any means.
No.
SGA was like, I'm going to take that money. Yeah. I'm taking that money. I'm MVP. I deserve that money.
If it's me, by the way, I'm on the side of the NBA Players Association. I'm taking that money.
Right. And that's why when we were having the conversation about do we think this will be a trend, we pointed out this is a very special thing that takes a very special person to do. We've only seen it a few times in sports history that guys have done this. LeBron has done it. Tom Brady has done it. Patrick Mahomes has done it. Joe Burrow has now done it. Jalen Brunson. And now maybe Victor Wembanyama is going to do it. Those are all guys, though, who are set up for other reasons as well, outside of just what their player contracts are. They also have a competitive nature that I just don't think is common that we see throughout sports. But that's where, like, when you look at the Thunder right now, they are experiencing a crunch because you are going to have to pay SGA, Chet, and Jalen Williams, presumably the top dollar of what they deserve. Now when you look at the Spurs, you say, oh, okay, we may not have that issue. If Victor takes less, we can give the money to Stephon Castle, we can give it to Dylan Harper, and still have additional money to play around with to fill out this roster. It is a huge gift to give a team, but if you are the Players Association, you have an issue with it, I think, just because you're taking money out of guys' pockets. I do think the biggest point that you brought up, though, that is true, is the bargaining power now that governors across the league and GMs across the league will have. They'll say, they'll definitely try it.
Yes.
It's without a doubt they're going to try it. They're going to say, the NBA champion, Jalen Brunson. And to be honest, that stat that I threw out at you the other day, the last eight champions, their superstar players only taken up 25% or less on the salary cap percentage. Those numbers are going to be used against players moving forward in contract negotiations. And specifically, there's a guy going through a contract negotiation right now who this conversation may trickle into his contract negotiation, and that is unfortunately our guy Jalen Duren. He is a young big right now seeking a max contract, and the Pistons will probably look at him and go, Victor's not taking one. Why should we give you one?
I don't know why Jalen Duren has to sit there and beg for this damn contract, by the way.
I also don't know that. I can't understand it.
We have discussed this. I don't think he's worth a max. Like, I wouldn't pay him a max. Maybe he's worth a max because you're worth what people will pay you. That's your value. Ultimately, I wouldn't pay him a max deal, but let's not lose sight of the fact that this guy is worth what Walker Kessler is at the very least, if not substantially more. He's a 20-10 guy who made the All-Star team and made the All-NBA team and won a playoff series. I still can't understand why this guy's got to beg for his contract, and the Lakers just threw 4 years, $130 million out there to Walker Kessler like it was nothing. Like, they didn't even give a damn. I mean, it's absolutely wild. But back to the point about Victor Wembanyama, my prediction is here in the next 5 years, while you see the Oklahoma City Thunder deal with those three big contracts, an A.J. Mitchell could walk. Cason Wallace almost guaranteed to walk. You know, like, guys like that will walk, where you'll see the Spurs probably keep together a lot of the guys that helped. Devin Vassell, we'll see what that looks like. Julian Champagne. Keldon Johnson. Vassell's
going to be a big one, too.
Keldon Johnson, you know, Tobias Harris just came in, so that may throw off that whole plan. But, you know, Luke Kornet, like, guys like this are much – it's much easier to keep them around if you have some breathing room to work with your biggest stars contract. Much easier to keep them around. But that's my prediction for the next 5 years. I think the Thunder – and you're already seeing it happen with the Thunder. The Thunder are going to start losing them. Player after player after player that has gotten them to this point. And I think the Spurs, if Victor Wembanyama takes a sweetheart deal, will be able to just keep that roster together, and keep that continuity that's worked so well for them in the past, to be clear. Like, you look at the dynastic version of the Spurs, they just kept those rosters together year over year over year, even the role players.
Right.
And I think you're looking at the same right now, obviously in a different era, in a different way, which makes it impressive.
Well, you're already seeing this offseason it impacting the Thunder because you have Isaiah Joe already got sent off.
Yep.
And right now, Lou Dort and Cason Wallace are kind of in limbo. You don't know if they're going to be...
Well, Lou Dort got the extension, right? But at the same time...
Well, they might have to... But to be honest, if they're going to pay... If they decide to keep Cason Wallace, Lou Dort might have to go out the door.
And Hartenstein's got his extension already.
Hartenstein's there. Alex Caruso, they're going to have to keep around. But that depth, you're already seeing it shrink away a little bit, and just over time it's going to keep going away, and that's why I am really curious to see what happens with these aprons specifically in the next CBA. I would have to imagine that they will be fought against, because it has caused this era of parity, I think, to some extent, but it is punishing teams for drafting well.
It's
punishing teams
is.
For good team building
it
and
is.
That seems incorrect to me. It just seems incorrect.
Yes, if you are able to draft and put together and develop a roster the way the Oklahoma City Thunder have, even though I don't think Connor and I hide it, we're not massive Oklahoma City Thunder fans, as I think the NBA world, not the biggest, you know, casual fans, not the biggest fans of watching SGA and that style of basketball.
Correct.
I still think they deserve a lot of credit and you know, grace, quite frankly, for how they went through lean years with Sam Presti, after star-studded rosters were put together, and that first one was through the draft, KD, Russ, and James Harden. But after those star-studded, they had to have some really lean years to get to where they're at now. And building this up to where they're at now was a lot of good evaluation in the draft and one unbelievable trade that should not be a hindrance at this point. It should be applauded. Widely, the SGA trade, the Paul George package, and everything that they got in return for Paul George. So if you're able to just, you know, finagle your way into a championship roster year over year and mostly through the draft, you should not have to ultimately be hindered by a CBA negotiation and the aprons and everything
right.
else. That is a frustration that I think everybody should.
Well, and right now, as Grizzlies fans, we're looking at the Thunder and going, ha, 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 you're having to figure out your money. Guess what? In a couple of seasons,
you.
It's going to be, if this
it's
era,
you.
If this young core works out in the way that we want it to, guess what we're going to run into here in a
Same
little bit?
Same thing.
Because you have, at minimum, there are three guys that I can pinpoint right now that are probably going to get pretty substantial contracts.
Zach Edey, Cedric Howard, Cam Boozer,
yep,
bam.
Boom, right
now,
there.
They're staggered a little bit, too.
Right.
So that's interesting. You have a three-year player, a two-year player, a second-year player, and then you're going to have a rookie. And that's kind of...
It's not dissimilar from the Thunder.
No, I was going to say more Spurs.
More Spurs. Sure. Right.
Because they had three straight top five picks, and all those guys are on... Because Dylan Harper was
Vassell
the rookie.
Is there, too.
Dylan Harper was the rookie. Stephon Castle was the second-year guy, and then
Wimby was
the third-year guy.
Yeah.
So, like, it's difficult in any situation. I do like that staggered start, though. That kind of helps at least
right.
a little bit to see what the next guy is going to do. They could potentially follow. But if the first guy takes a pay cut, let's not discount this idea. If Victor Wembanyama takes that pay cut, the guys behind him waiting for extensions could potentially follow in line if their teammate is doing that. Like that's a reality we could live in if Victor Wembanyama
culture
setting and his. You know, his self is the one to take the pay cut.
Yeah, I understand the core of the Spurs is better than the core of the Grizzlies.
Yes,
it's when
yes.
you have Victor Wembanyama, Dylan Harper, Stephon Castle. I'm not saying that the cores are comparable.
I don't think the comparison needed to be one for one.
And
somebody.
The Grizzlies may get lucky here, quote unquote lucky, but like Cedric Howard, I don't know if I envision him as an All NBA All
sure.
defense guy. So like those things aren't going to kick in for his contract. But I could see Cam Boozer maybe making one of those teams.
Yeah.
I can see Zach Edey maybe making one of those teams. So that's two that I think you're definitely all defense for Zach Edey could certainly be something if he's able to play an entire season and have the impact that he did in the few games that he played last year. So it's just something to keep an eye on, I think, for the CBA and the Grizzlies moving forward. And some of the better teams that you're seeing now being squeezed a bit, that will be your reality. And we can be honest about it. This Grizz next gen era ended because of this. They
yep.
couldn't pay Desmond Bane. They couldn't pay Jaren Jackson Jr. They couldn't pay.
So Slomo's gone. Melton's gone.
Tyus is gone.
And
Brooks
as much
is gone.
As we talk
right.
about Dylan being sort of the start of the fall, I still want people to remember Grizzlies didn't have enough money to pay him. He got a $90 million deal. to go to the Houston Rockets. That was not something they were going to be able to afford with the rest of the core that they had built.
Right.
But again, you had to let those guys walk out the door because of money in the end of the day, and flexibility and keeping your cap situation in at least a healthy position going into the future while you're still trying to win that. It's tough, but you did see, I mean, by, I don't know, 2 years after Dylan Brooks left, you were looking up and you're like, do they have any viable NBA players to play with the core that they built so well? And they didn't at that point. They really didn't have enough.
And then the injuries really started to hit. You have to, I mean, look at the Celtics.
Yep.
And it was our theory.
They're unrecognizable compared to when they won the championship.
Our theory when he was traded was, unfortunately, this isn't strategic. It's a salary dump. And then Brad Stevens came out and said exactly that. We moved him because of the salary. We wanted to have future flexibility with salary. It's like, I know, because my response to that would be, don't you want flexibility in the future to have a combination of players like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown?
Time will tell, okay? But my take on that situation would be, if you still have a chance to win a championship, we shouldn't be planning for the future in a massive way. Yes, I want you to stay flat. I don't want you to completely bottom out and just be in cap hell for years and years and years when these guys turn 36, 37, and 38. I don't want you to put yourself in that position, but those guys are still approaching 30. I thought that was a mishandling, personally, of the cap more than blaming it directly on the cap. I think that was a bit of a cop out for them in making what I believe is a dumb decision at the moment. Again, time will tell. Now we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but Kawhi Leonard and the aspiration investigation that the NBA is conducting at the moment, and has been conducting for the last 11 months. It's going on, and this trade between the Raptors and the Clippers that sent Kawhi Leonard back to the Raptors for Brandon Ingram, Grady Dick, 2 first-round picks, 2 seconds, and a pick swap in the second round. That is on hold because of the investigation. And Shams Charania gave us an update today, and here is that update.
Just kind of help break it down because it's very complicated for our audience.
Hannah, I'm told that both the Raptors and the Clippers are confident and believe and expect that at the end of this investigation into potential salary cap circumvention to the Clippers and Kawhi Leonard, that this trade will go through. And both teams, there is a sense of urgency from them on an investigation outcome that has continued on here for 10 months. From the players' union side, there's also a sense of urgency as well. And listen, the NBA, for its part, has made it clear that results from the law firm independently is still weeks away. And at the crux of this, the delay in a trade being completed is because the Raptors would assume the risk of any potential discipline to Kawhi Leonard. That does not mean that there will be discipline for Leonard, but if he is implicated in any way in this, you're looking at fine, suspension, you're looking at potential voiding of contract, and that would have a result to the potential trade value of Kawhi Leonard. But Hannah, throughout the month of June, multiple teams, Minnesota, Detroit, Miami, as well as Toronto, were exploring possibilities of a Kawhi Leonard deal, and neither of them operated with any type of restriction toward any type of deal getting through. And so now, 10 days into July, business has been halted for both sides, the Clippers and the Raptors, and three players in Kawhi Leonard, Brandon Ingram, and Grady Dick now in limbo.
Okay, so weeks again seems to be the time. What he said really was just like, what's,
slop.
Yeah, what's happening? It seems there were other teams involved that had no reservations about trading for Kawhi Leonard. The Raptors were the team that got it across the finish line. Why would these teams be so confident to be able to go out and trade for Kawhi Leonard if they didn't think that this would be the biggest nothing burger that we've seen in the 2020s?
Right.
As far as like an overwhelming NBA story is concerned, the drama.
This isn't Watergate.
See, right? Like,
right.
That many teams being confident enough to go trade for Kawhi Leonard and not being worried about the trade going through tells me that I think most people have the understanding nothing's going to happen. That's just my take.
It gives me a few thoughts. One of them is, well, yeah, the team that's getting Kawhi, why would they be punished? You know what I mean? Like, the punishment.
Still stupid.
You're not taking a ton of risk there except for a oh, Kawhi might be suspended for a little bit, but it's not like it's going to be a full season suspension. Yeah. So,
and it's not going to be an organizational.
As long as I have Kawhi for the playoffs, I don't care. This is a guy that's going to load manage anyway. I don't care as long as I have Kawhi for the playoffs, it's a risk worth taking. The second thought I have is the idea around the NBA, to your point, is, oh, this is Silver's buddy. Whatever punishment this is going to be probably isn't going to be the hammer.
Now, do they know it for fact, or are they still speculating at this moment?
It's probably speculation, and I am curious because Silver is such a reactive commish, and we know that he's on social media. I am curious if the reaction to this may cause more of a hammer to come down because he has to prove that he's not biased here with the Clippers. I'm just curious if we see that.
If he's going to drop the hammer, I don't think it'll be the 100%.
Okay? No, no.
And this phrasing is going to get weird, but just stick with me. I think about the half, 50% of the hammer.
Sure.
That's what I would imagine is the action. I can't imagine this being like a full year suspension for Steve Ballmer and draft picks taken away. It's hard for me to imagine that. And it seems like a lot of the teams that were in the Kawhi Leonard business probably thought that the punishment would not be anything substantial.
And again, for this to still have weeks to go, it makes me believe that they were dragging their feet on this.
Well,
it had kind of gone to the backseat. And then when Kawhi was in trade conversations,
this would have been quiet if he didn't get moved.
It probably signaled to the league, oh, we actually have to do something about this now. So I wonder how much of that investigation had been done until now. You know what I mean? Or if they were just
11 months worth plus previous to that, what was found in by the FBI and otherwise that put the founder behind bars for 14 years. I'd imagine there's been plenty of information uncovered.
Right.
I can't imagine a week or 2 weeks is going to uncover the smoking gun after 11 months worth of an independent investigation.
Right. Exactly.
Again, Connor, like we can sit here and you know talk about how wrong Kawhi and the Clippers are for doing this. I think when we look at the NBA, they are the most wrong for the way they've handled this along the way. Because I don't think they would have said word one, and this is me speculating, but I don't think they would have said word one had Kawhi Leonard not been moved. I think they would have tried to sweep this under the rug and nothing would have come out of it at all. We would not be hearing any shouts, any updates had he not been traded, which is, it goes to the heart of what I hate most about the commissioner's office in the NBA. The reactionary, no foresight sort of thing they have going for them right now has to change. It has to.
Totally agree. It's if Kawhi was going to be a Clipper next season, we probably wouldn't be hearing about this right now. There's no doubt in my mind that this has been made a priority because of the trade. And it's just silly to me that we're nearly 11 months into this thing and no decision has been made. You shouldn't still be gathering evidence. You shouldn't still be investigating. At the very least, you should be deciding what the actual punishment is. And that doesn't need a few weeks. It just doesn't. You can do that in a few days.
I agree. I think this investigation should have been over months ago.
It's very clear to me that Pablo Torre released a video, I think, July 1st?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I said their hand has been forced in this situation. Their hand has been forced this entire time. I mean, I don't know how much they knew about it before Pablo Torre came out and said what he said, but I'd imagine somebody knew something about something.
They knew something.
But this has been... The fact that their problems had to be figured out by someone else and then they had to react, you're the one that lives in the building every day. You're the one that's around these guys. The fact that Pablo Torre had to do all of this work is
now,
it should be very embarrassing for the NBA, but I don't really see them wearing it like that.
The very small credit that I can give the NBA is it does sound like they made it known to teams, the Raptors and Clippers, hey, this trade might not be able to go through immediately because we're doing this. We're still working on this. That's like a 1% of credit to at least they didn't blindside these teams with it. And that's why when the news came out, the Raptors had a statement that was ready. They clearly knew about it. They clearly expected it. And
my issue with that is we didn't hear about it until days later.
No, weeks, no, the teams. Later. I'm assuming the teams knew, though. The public probably did not. We
well,
did
the
not.
The only
but
thing
the teams
I would ask about that is why did we get the statements a week later once
know.
The NBA announced that this
probably,
was going to be on
you know,
hold?
Probably because Raptors fans were probably like, where the hell is the team?
This doesn't
the
strike me as a situation where the NBA really gave them a full on rundown of what was going
to
happen.
They probably said there's a risk here, but when the trade happened, they probably had to say,
on the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
These are the possibilities.
Once the trade happened, they said, all right, this is going to be put on hold. We have an investigation. But before that, I don't know. I would be very surprised if the NBA said anything about it.
This is just all nonsense.
It is. It is very much nonsense. But hopefully here in the what's the praise coming weeks? Hopefully here in the coming weeks, we have a resolution. We'll grab a break. Hour number two is on the way. And Parker Fleming joins on the other side because he's the greatest on a Friday. Make sure you stick.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.